Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Hello, hello to our faithful listener or listeners, if there is more than one. I am Kyle Borg, a co-host of Three Guys Theologizing. And as usual, I am joined with my two co-hosts, but let me just give a quick word. While Barry and Scott are co-hosts, to me, they're so much more. They're friends, they're allies, they're mentors. They are really like father figures to me. And I just want everybody to be clear how much I appreciate both of these men. And so I am joined by my friends and my co-hosts, Barry York and Scott Hunt. Scott, that was primarily for you, so that it is now on record that I do appreciate you, despite all the spark that often comes from me to you. So.
Makes me feel good, Kyle. I will get you. I will return the favor someday when I host an episode.
You're so, we all look forward to the next time you.
You're so sweet, Kyle.
Yes.
You know, let Rachel know that if you could drop her a quick note to let her know what a great guy I am. But we do welcome our listeners back around the table as we gather to theologize on various topics. Today's topic actually comes as a recommendation from one of our listeners. Our listener wanted to know who we were going to endorse for president. And I think we can say with unanimous voice that 3GT is endorsed. I won't do that. Our listener did ask us if we would be willing to discuss the topic, in particular, of Old Testament poverty laws, and whether or not those laws might be used in a way to justify morally a socialistic philosophy or a socialistic economy. And so there's quite a bit there to begin digging through, but we thought that is a great question. Of course, all joking aside, especially democratic socialism is getting a lot of attention. There is a Why are you guys laughing about it? This is no joking matter. Nope, you're not even going to respond to that.
No.
So socialism is a question that is being thrown around our culture. And of course, as Christians, we ought to theologize that topic and to think biblically about it. And so let's start, as this question has been presented to us. First of all, could you give us, could you give our listeners a bit of an understanding? Our listener writes in and asks if we could expand on the law and provisions that God implemented in the Old Testament for the poor. What are some of those things? Where in the Old Testament would you go to? What are some of the provisions and the laws that God instituted specifically with the poor in mind?
I think our listener may be responding to an episode we did not too long ago about the law of God in the life of the believer. And I think during that time, as we were talking about some of the uses of the law, we might have mentioned this aspect that there's many laws in the Old Testament, particularly in the first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, that address how to take care of the poor. And they're found primarily in the books of Exodus and Deuteronomy. For instance, Deuteronomy 15 talks a lot about those who are in places of debt and how to help them, what to do, what not to do. So that'd be one place where you'd find some poverty laws. There's also just many commands, in a sense, scattered through the law where we're commanded to care for the orphan, the alien, the stranger. So it's quite a common theme in the first five books of the Bible, what we often refer to as the law section of the Old Testament. So I think that's where this question's coming from. And I think it's associated with a second question regarding socialism, because there is often an attempt by those who hold to a socialistic philosophy to use particular references from the Old Testament to say that the government should be helping take care of the poor, we would view that as a misreading of scripture. We could talk more about that, but I think that's where these questions are coming from.
Yeah. And you know, to be clear, the Old Testament law does command a certain respect, a certain attitude, and certain duties to the poor that at our peril we ignore. And I'm thinking of things like, you know, when you're harvesting the field, you are to leave stuff for the gleaners, for them to come in, and you don't stop them from coming in and gleaning the field. So there are these ideas, these laws of how to take care of the poor. I would probably argue that there are not civil penalties or criminal penalties attached to those laws. There are moral commands. So they probably shouldn't be adopted by our modern government as ways to try to take from one group and give to another group. But I'm sure we'll get into that. The other thing I wanted to point out is this is not a new issue. I remember some 20 years ago when I was in college having the same discussion with a man about socialism and shouldn't the church be supporting socialism. And he didn't go to the Old Testament law. Rather, he went to Acts. It was Acts chapter 2, where it says that they were breaking bread in homes and they were giving up of their own stuff and basically displaying kind of a commune there in the early church. And that's really what we should be going for. So this isn't anything new on the one hand, but there is certainly a renewed interest in that given certain presidential candidates.
I appreciate both of those answers. And Scott, thank you for also bringing in some of the New Testament. While the question we got from our listener doesn't deal with that, I think it is very fair to say that both the Old and the New Testament, there is a particular emphasis on poor people, poor according to the standards of the world. I remember every year or every 4 years, our denomination gathers for something called the Reformed Presbyterian International Conference. And the speaker at the last international conference, his name escapes me at the moment. He was tall. He was sometimes gentle, sometimes harsh, sometimes wise, sometimes foolish. I Barry, it was you. That's right. Oh, it was Barry. Oh. One of the things that Barry said in his talks that has really stuck with me, particularly because of my context of rural ministry, Barry, I'm going to paraphrase you because I can't get the exact quote, but when you read the Bible, really one of the only subcultures that there is a tremendous emphasis in the Old and the New Testament on is the poor. And so let's, before we get into some more of this question, can I just ask, Why is the Bible, why is God so concerned with the poor? And why should that concern be reflected by Christians?
I think it displays God's attribute of being a God of mercy, that he condescends and he has a special regard for the poor. It really reflects the gospel because the scriptures teach us that Jesus became poor for our sake so that we might become rich in him. So there's very much the heart of the gospel, I think, displayed in God's care for the poor. And because he cares for the poor, then he wants his followers to do likewise. So it really reflects a proper understanding of our salvation. One of the things that always strikes me as I read the Old Testament law, and again, particularly in the Pentateuch, and you see God's command to care for the poor among you or to take care of the orphan, the widow, the stranger, often God attaches to that command to take care of the impoverished. He reminds them that you were once a slave in Egypt. He ties their salvation from slavery in Egypt to this command to care for others because he's basically saying to them, in the same way that I demonstrated my salvation to you and relieving you from your poverty and slavery in Egypt, I want you to likewise go and do that to others. Psalm 68 is a wonderful psalm that talks about God leading his people out of Egypt through the wilderness and into the promised land so that he could establish a land of mercy and justice where he is the God of the orphan and the widow would be known. So that was really Israel's calling in many ways, was to be a kingdom of priests, a people that really cared and showed and displayed the mercy of God to those around them.
And ultimately, in one regard, we are all poor and destitute before the Lord. And so I think his call for us to be mindful of the poor is a call for us to remember what we have been saved from. And that's our extreme poverty. And out of gratitude for that, it's a reminder to care for those who do not have, I guess, the physical things of this world. And I do, just for the record, I do want to distinguish between the poor and those who are, I guess, have a poverty mindset. There is a difference. So there are some people who are poor just because of life circumstances. There are other people who are poor because of stupid choices and foolish choices. And so I kind of want to make a distinguish between those two groups, as it were.
And the Bible does that as well. I mean, it's pretty clear that, like in the book of Proverbs, that there are consequences for foolish behavior. And one of them is that people can impoverish themselves. And we do have to weigh some of that when we're dealing with different individuals.
But that's something I don't think is taken into consideration, at least in our times. I mean, the poor is the poor, usually if it's their stupid decisions that are making them poor. And I'm thinking of people who abuse drugs, alcohol, those kind of things, it's not their fault. It's something that's been done to them. So we have more of a duty to care for them. And I don't think that that demarcation is made today like it has been in other times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that brings up a good point. I mean, Barry, you directed us to the Proverbs, but even, think of 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, where Paul deals, here's a New Testament one, here's something coming out of the context of the life and the ministry of Jesus, and Paul is still able to say, if you don't work, you don't eat. Like, there is a responsibility. Christianity values hard work and industry. So, notwithstanding, I think you guys have demonstrated, the Bible does have a concern for the poor because God has a concern for the poor. And I think, I'm going to make a broad sweeping generalization, but I think at least on a superficial level, it's very easy to look at, for instance, an economic principle or a philosophy like socialism and think, ooh, that's really being concerned for the poor. A lot of times that becomes the rhetoric and the talking point. Socialism is really concerned for the poor and for the oppressed, and we want to help those people who are impoverished. And there is an argument there, again, more rhetorical than anything, where it does somewhat pull on the heartstrings, and say, well, isn't this showing the compassion that the Bible itself and that God shows to the poor? So let's talk about that. Even though we recognize that God has a concern for the poor, and maybe before this episode is over, we'll get to maybe what a good alternative is to socialism. Why does socialism not hold up under the light of Scripture? Why is it that we would not say socialism is actually promoting the compassion of God towards impoverished people?
Well, one thing I would say, I'll let you talk here in a second, Barry, but one thing I would say is it has this appearance of godliness, like I care for the poor, but what really happens in these situations is people who espouse socialism tend to want to take from somebody else and do with their money and their property and their things to help the poor. There's no self-sacrifice involved. God doesn't, God calls us to sacrifice for others. He doesn't call us to find somebody else to take from so that somebody can be helped. Helping the poor is about sacrifice for them. And with socialism and people who support this idea usually want to tax the rich to oblivion so that people like them and the poor can, you know, can be on level footing. So it's systematized theft as far as I'm concerned. I'll just show you my cards.
Don't hold back now, Scott. Don't hold back.
I saw this great meme. I think we talked about memes in our last episode where, you know, somebody giving somebody money is charity. Somebody pointing a gun at you telling me, give me your money so I can give it to somebody else is theft. So I think that's kind of what can happen when there's these forced ideas of charity and socialism.
Okay, I think that's helpful. So to summarize that, one reason would be is that socialism does promote the helping of other people, but really with your neighbor's resources.
Right.
Whereas the Bible really does emphasize personal responsibility. You know, I don't care if Bernie Sanders spends his millions of dollars to help the impoverished of our nation or the world, but there is an individual responsibility in the scriptures, like you've been saying, Scott. You know, if your neighbor is lacking a shirt, give them your shirt. Jesus didn't say, well, give them your neighbor's shirt.
Give them Bernie's shirt.
Give them Bernie's shirt. Right? So there's, I think that's a good observation. There's one reason why socialism isn't morally justifiable. God doesn't say use everybody else's resources. As we care for the poor, we use the resources and we steward what God has given to us. What are some other reasons?
Well, I think that's why socialism is so deceptive, because it the message is that we're going to take care of everyone and everyone's going to share equally. You know, the definition is that it's a system where you're going to produce and distribute and exchange things, and that's going to, in a sense, be regulated by the community as a whole. But that's not how it ever functions, because who's doing the regulation? Well, the regulation's going to come from government officials. They start making the decisions of how people's personal property is to be redistributed. And so there's no volunteer aspect to it. So it's really easy to go and vote for a politician who says he's going to take care of everyone and be blinded to the fact that he's going to be taking from some people in order to be giving that to others. And in the process, lose a lot of the value of those things, take away motives and incentives of people to work hard because they're expecting the government to take it from them or give it to them. And so it really destroys really our belief in the commandment against stealing, the basis for that. It takes away, as you guys are pointing out, the Bible just emphasizes over and over again that, yes, the poor are to be taken care of them, but you're to do that. Jesus told the disciples when the 5,000 were hungry, you give them something to eat. And he provided through them in order to do that. He tells us on the day of judgment, he's going to come and see whether we've taken care of the least of the brothers of ours. And it's going to be whether you gave the hungry something to eat, or whether you visited the sick or the imprisoned. So there's a real personal dynamic that comes from a true faith in Christ that's to be driving all of this. And anything else outside of that is really a promotion of idolatry, government really becoming God and taking care of people. And that's really the big problem with a lot of our youth. The young people are, you know, Bernie Sanders is really popular among the young people because they're buying into this deceptive teaching.
So both of you have mentioned the word stealing with regards to some of this. Could you flesh out, do some work on this topic that, you know, what would be the difference between socialism redistributing wealth and a tax system? You know, the Apostle Paul in Romans 13 says, you know, as good Christian, out of what God has done for us, you know, we pay our taxes. And he doesn't seem to recognize, and I don't think the Bible does, that taxes in and of themselves at face value are a form of theft. So how would you reason with somebody who says, well, Paul tells us to pay taxes, government can then take that money that is given and do what they want with it. Is there an element of truth to that, or what would you say?
Well, Well, Micah 6:8 tells us what God really requires of man. It's to do justice and to love mercy and to walk humbly with God. And so there has to be any kind of tax system, if it's going to be reflective of a true morality, it should be a just tax system. But when people are being taxed at different rates depending on their social status, and you know, you go out and work hard and you make more money, and then the government takes more from you just because you've earned more money, that's not biblical justice. And so that's a form of socialism and redistribution of wealth. So a tax system should be fair. Now, rarely are tax systems fair, and we do, as citizens, not only of the kingdom of God, but of this world, we have to live under those, but that doesn't mean that it's a right system. And we need to teach and train people and see the church help people understand what true equity would look like in a culture that's more influenced by the gospel than ours is, or many of the nations of the earth are at this time. That's probably a whole different philosophical discussion we could have. But one of the things that would, I think, distinguish this is what is really truly equitable or not.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think back to the warnings that were given to Israel when they have about a king, and what is the king going to do? One of the things is, you know, the king's going to tax you and I believe, and I can't recall right off the top of my head where it is, but, you know, the Bible said more than, I think, 9 or 10%. And that was considered heavy taxation. And there's two interesting things about that. One is that the tithe is 10%. So anytime the government takes more than God requires, you know something's wrong. The second thing is, you know, God doesn't have a graduated tithe system where, you know, if you make a certain amount of money, you pay 10%. If you make more than that, you have to pay 50%. If you are a multimillionaire, we're going to take 90%. In your for tithe. That's not what God did. There's an equitable system there. So I think you talk about socialist systems and versus taxation. I think oftentimes taxation starts off in a good way, but people see the value or the ability to get more. And so they use graduated income tax systems, which, by the way, was introduced by Marx, I believe. He wanted that. So that's the graduated income tax is partially a communist or a socialist idea. So you have that.
I think both of you are highlighting a point here where we need to do a lot of work. It's not just about being merciful. Mm-hmm. It is also about justice. And that could probably take up a whole episode of itself. But, you know, we need to be very concerned with a just system as well. And I think that just because it's being merciful or compassionate or nice, you know, according to the world standards, doesn't mean at the end of the day it is being just. So we're kind of running out of time, but what I'm hearing from you guys is, yes, there's a concern for the poor. We as Christians especially are to have a concern for the poor. Mandating that the government do all of that is not probably the way we would go. There's individual responsibility. Are there other contexts, if we don't say it's the government's job in every way, shape, and form, are there other contexts where those who are in need can be taken care of? What do you think?
Well, I think the church clearly has a duty to care for the poor as well. And you see that not only in the New Testament times, but in the Old Testament, there were provisions for poor that were given to the priests. And so there is this idea of a community taking care of the poor, but that community was not the state. That community was the church. And so I think our church bears a lot of responsibility in ministering to the poor.
And I would add to that, you know, especially when you read biblically on this, it is a caring for the poor within the walls of the church, so to speak, that, you know, the church was not seen to be at least in my reading, I'm willing to receive pushback, but the church itself was not seen to be a societal distribution of these things. There is a concern for those especially in the household of faith. The Apostle Paul is it in Galatians where, you know, yes, you need to be kind to all, but especially to those in the household of faith. And you see the resources, the financial resources or the material resources, especially in the New Testament, those are things being given to those within the church. I don't think the church is the answer for, you know, Jesus himself, the poor you will always have with you. We can't eradicate it. Well, any other context or any other institutions that are to have a particular concern maybe for those in need?
Well, I think it's important to point out, just following along with what you're saying, like in Acts 6, when there were widows that were being overlooked in the distribution of food, that the church appointed deacons to take care of them. So the church has an actual office to help really take care of the issues of mercy. And I've always found it fascinating that when these deacons began to do their work there in the early church, it says in Acts 6, verse 7, that the disciples continued to multiply. And it says a great many of the priests became obedient to the faith. I think the priests, who in the Old Testament had this responsibility, saw the church actually doing what it's supposed to do in caring for the poor, and it caused many of them to be convicted and converted to the faith. So we have a diaconal office. We also are to really encourage families that they have a responsibility to care for their own. And Paul's instruction to Timothy as he's talking to him about the widows, it's very clear that the widows, if they have family, that's really the first line of responsibility. So children should be taking care of their older parents and helping them. They don't have to do that solely by themselves. Of course, the church can come along and help, but they really should be the first line of responsibility. The prophet Isaiah condemned Israel because they weren't caring for their own family members.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking as well. Both church and family are to be seen as really the primary resources for these things. And of course, I don't think at the end of the day that excludes. I do think the government needs to do their part to create an environment and an atmosphere where mercy and justice are both able to be displayed. And so that's not to just say the government has no place in that. The government does, but the government needs to respect the place that they have in that. They need to help enforce an environment where these things can happen.
Especially in times of emergency, yes. They should be responding. We see that examples of that, such as in the days of Joseph.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. Well, there's probably so much more that we could say about that, but we have run out of time. I thank you guys for both of your thoughts on this topic, and we thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. Be sure to head to our website, 3gt.xyz. Head to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, and if you feel so inclined, we are an impoverished podcast. We'd like to do your part to contribute. Let us know we are listener supported, and we would love to continue this journey with you. Well, thanks for tuning into this episode of Three Guys Theology.